Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, October 26th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, fresh from her triumphant run as a volunteer during the WAMC fund drive, Carrie O'Loughlin is back. Dr. O'Loughlin is with Delmar Animal Hospital in Delmar, New York. As you can guess, it is our Pets and Vets program today, and we'd be happy to field your calls, 800-348-2551, unless you have a yak or something. I don't know, maybe she could give it a shot. A gnu. 800-348-2551. Carrie O'Loughlin, your calls. It's Pets and Vets. It happens after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call and talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Well, it's our Pets and Vets program this afternoon, and here to take your calls is Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of Delmar Animal Hospital in Delmar, New York. Dr. O'Loughlin is a graduate of Cornell University. She joined the Delmar Animal Hospital staff in 1998. Always a popular guest, always a popular topic. Get your calls in now, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also post your comments by emailing us at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, or you could call 800-348-2551. Well, Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin, welcome back. I only saw you last week.
I know. It seems like just yesterday.
You know, it's amazing. You come in and you volunteer during a crazy fun drive, and I tell you, we really appreciate that.
It was busy this time.
It really
Everything got compacted.
It was such a fast drive.
It was.
So we really, I mean, usually you're on, you relax, you read the paper. This time we had you working.
Yep.
That's
yep.
great. Well, it's so good that you came. And nice to have you here for the show. What's new with you?
Well, I guess not so much new with me. I was going to mention something in the animal world.
Oh, yeah?
Well, just people tend to think it's cold. You know,
yeah.
It's getting cold out. The leaves are falling off the trees. You know, all the bugs are probably dead outside. No.
Okay.
The ticks are crazy busy right now.
Really?
This is the busiest time of year for ticks to be wanting to bite a nice furry warm critter and get some blood.
Mm-hmm.
So, definitely not time to let down your guard and keep up using whatever flea and tick protection you've been using.
Thank you for reminding me. It's time. The 7 months is up. I got to get the Seresto again for kitty cat. So this one came in via email. Before we start with the phones at 800-348-2551. This is from Betsy in Albany. We have an 18-and-a-half-year-old cat and have recently rescued a young female stray who we decided to keep. She's living in the basement and has a vet appointment tomorrow for testing shots and spaying. How do you suggest we help these gals get used to each other? Our older cat has been top cat since her sister passed in the spring. That's a toughie.
It is a toughie. And especially, unfortunately, not to be sexist, but with female cats seem to be a little less willing to accept a new critter in the house.
Yeah.
Not across the board. There are some very happy cats that will take in any new cat, but you got to go slow. I like to keep them in their own space, make sure they have their own litter boxes. You don't want cats getting stressed because of the new cat in the house and start urinating outside the litter box, which will sometimes happen. You can often start by swapping their odors. So take a towel or whatever bedding the one cat is sleeping on and bring it in with the other cat and vice versa so they can sort of smell each other before they see each other. And don't rush it. They say that cats go through three levels of accepting a new cat. The sort of, I hate you, get out of my life stage. The, well, okay, I guess I can tolerate you as long as you don't get too close. To finally the, all right, you're cool, you can stay, you know, we're good. And some cats go right through those, you know, one, two, three, and they're great. Other cats will get stuck somewhere along the way. It's pretty rare to get stuck in the I hate you stage. but that can happen.
Yeah.
It happened in my house.
And never got better?
Yeah, I have a six-year-old cat who hates actually, she's 10 years old, and they're now 5 years old, and they still don't like each other.
So will feel away help?
Absolutely, yeah. Things like feel away, they have calming collars, too, that you can use.
What are they?
They're sort of a pheromone, like the feel away, only it comes in a collar that the cats can wear.
Do they have calming collars for people?
Yeah.
Because there are a couple people around here who
alcohol.
Well, now you're speaking my language. Let's go to Cody in Greensville, Mass. Cody, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I have a dog, Einstein, and he's a Westie, and he likes to rub his chest on the carpet or on our rug. And he's been doing it for a while, but the last couple of months it's been getting so bad that the hair is rubbed up on his chest, and it's kind of created a rash. And I'm just wondering if this is a common thing for dogs and what I can do to kind of stop the behavior in the future.
So a couple of questions for you, Cody. How old is your pup?
Yep. He's about 2 years old.
2 years old. Okay. Yep. Generally, my guess is he's itchy, and he's doing this to soothe an itch that he has on his chest. It's a hard spot for them to, like, scratch at, per se.
Right, yeah.
And itchy dogs are almost always allergic dogs. And Westies as a breed are a breed that have a tendency to have allergies.
Huh.
So you may want to have a discussion with your veterinarian about allergies. There are two main kinds of allergies, environmental allergies. So it can be things outside, things inside, or the other main category is food. So you have to try and determine, you know, is it year-round? Is it worse any time of year? That tends to make you think more environmental. If it's constant year-round, then you start to think food. And unfortunately, some dogs have all three.
Okay, yeah.
So.
All right, well, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. We appreciate the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is our guest. And over to Ellen in Medusa, New York. Ellen, you're on.
Hello there, Ray.
Hello.
And Carrie.
Hi.
I'm calling about Barkus B, a little brown dog, and I'm interested to get her a dog coat. She hates to come in, and she shivers when she's out, and it's only going to get worse. Do you have any suggestions?
Absolutely. They make a lot of good doggy coats. I've gotten some for my Marcus, who has short hair and gets cold. I just basically did a Google search under dog sweaters or dog coats. There are a couple of different companies out there, a bunch of different companies that make them, different varieties from raincoats to fleece coats to almost like a winter coat. Most of them are, you know, they sort of Velcro on, so they fit various size dogs. And I used to think coats were silly for dogs, but really for some of the short-coated dogs in this area in the cold, they need it. You know, they don't have the insulation. So
what about for cats?
Cats tend to not be thin-coated like some dogs.
Oh, well, you make a point. Okay. So. Well, there you go, Ellen.
Hey, well, thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. Let's go to Kate in Oneonta. Kate, you're on.
Oh, hi. Thank you. Yes, I have a thoroughbred horse. I don't know if you do large animals.
I don't, unfortunately. But
okay. All right.
Yeah, I'm afraid, unfortunately, my horse knowledge is extremely limited.
So really, there's no generic sort of information that might transfer?
No. In fact, even the veterinarians that used to work at our practice that did large animals didn't even work on their own horses.
Really?
Horses are very, very different animals. So
you
really need to be a horse vet.
Already.
What's wrong with your horse, Kate?
Well, actually, I called Kentucky last night. I have a girlfriend there, and she thinks it's shin splints. But I've had two vets out there, and the first one said cellulitis, and I did a week and a half of antibiotics, did nothing, and I buted her, and, you know, then that next vet came out, and he's a little bit closer, but he still thinks it's some kind of infection, and I have DMSO that's infused with an antibiotic and an anti-steroid, but the DMSO seems to be what's bringing it down, the swelling. It's there's like a large lump. And then underneath that lump is fluid, but it's not into her joints because she can run around. It's not painful. I don't ride her, but, you know, she's not restricted at all in movement.
Yeah, I doubt it's the DMSO. The DMSO is really a carrying agent that just draws the other medication into the skin.
Okay.
So it's either the antibiotic, the steroid, or both that are helping. So
all right.
Okay, because she had said that her vet did the DMSO, and they scrub it on with a toothbrush and then hose. So I don't know. There's something about the DMSO that I don't know.
We'll have to get a large animal vet in here someday, Kate, but thank you for the call.
Yeah, but she had done it years ago, so it may have been mixed with something and she doesn't remember.
Right.
So,
Sorry, that seems to be helping
a little bit.
Well, thanks, Kate. Thank you.
Good luck.
Bye now. So, I mean, it's that much different? Dogs don't get shin splints?
They don't, no.
No? No. Not even the bigger dogs?
They can get something similar that are like a growing pain.
Dogs have shins, though, right?
Yes.
They do.
Okay.
Well, the things.
Yeah, horses are totally different critters.
Okay. Well, let's go over to Judy in Albany. Judy, how are you?
I'm just fine. What advice would you have? I have a terrier who is an unstoppable hunter of rodents. And a couple of weeks ago, while hiking in the Adirondacks, she pounced on a porcupine.
Oops.
And got a mouthful of quills. And I did my best to rip them all out, but I'd like to know if there's anything that I can do better next time if I'm on the trail and far away from vet care.
Yeah, unfortunately, not really. You can try and pull the quills out that you can see, but if they're all in the mouth, honestly, you really need to sedate or anesthetize them to get them out. There are very few dogs that are going to let you, you know, open their mouth and pull quills out. And
we had quite the struggle.
Yes.
Oh, my best.
Yeah. And unfortunately, dogs don't seem to learn their lesson. I've had dogs go back the same day.
Oh, boy.
That we pulled quills and get them again. So they almost seem to get mad at them. So
that would be her attitude. I'll get you next time.
Exactly. Yeah. And she's a terrier. You know, that's what terriers do. They're made to go get the critters. So she's just doing what instinct tells her to do. So
is it the quill that is the problem that I've heard that moves along in the muscles? Or is it the little sheath that holds the quill that's the real danger?
No, really, the quill is just a hair. It's just, you know, a big fat hair. So there's no like special thing about it. It's just a big sharp hair. So it's the quill itself. If it breaks off under the skin or it gets completely under the skin and embedded, it basically acts as what we call a foreign body in the body. And the animal will eventually dissolve it, the body, or they will sometimes sort of spit them out. And we've had quills show up at the surface of the skin months later. And unfortunately, we've had a few go the other way and go deeper into the body and cause real problems. But we try and get them out as best you can, but sometimes you can't get them all.
Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is our guest. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Quality Foreign Car Care in Boston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years, QFCC.com. Temple Sinai, Saratoga Springs, New York, an open congregation welcoming the Jewish community and visitors for Shabbat, holiday services, the religious school, cultural programs, and more, SaratogaSinai.org. Bed and Bowl, Huntington, Massachusetts, a home-style bed and breakfast for dogs, offering overnight boarding on a 50-acre farm, convenient to Northampton, Springfield, and the Berkshires, bedandbowl.com. Schenectady Symphony Orchestra, announcing Trick or Treat, an October Halloween concert, this Sunday at 3 p.m. at Proctor's Main Stage, schenectadysymphony.org for information. And Schenectady County Historical Society in Schenectady's Historic Stockade District, presenting the Vote Here, Vote Now series, featuring exhibition, speakers, and presidential trivia night with prizes on November 7th, SchenectadyHistorical.org.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Our number is 800-348-2551. Pets and vets today. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is our guest. And let's see, who's been waiting the longest here? Let's go to Daniel in Cooperstown. Daniel, you're on.
Hi. So my parents have a beagle. They used to have a beagle and a cocker spaniel. And a couple of years ago, the cocker spaniel passed away, unfortunately. And about a week or two after this, the beagle started like neurotically just scratching at her ears and her lower abdomen. So to the point where it's scratching the hair away and the skin away and causing infections. And my parents have tried, like, cones on the paws. They've tried cones around the neck to cover the ears. But if you cover the ears, then she just goes after the body. And if you cover the paws with the body, then it, she just, like, either scratches the cones off or scratches herself with the cones. And we were just wondering if there's a way to, or a better method, to try and get this to stop so she doesn't keep causing infections in her ear and on her sides.
Well, I guess, you know, the big question is, what is causing it? You know, was was it coincidental with the death of the other dog? And this is just a beagle who, again, it's another breed that's very prone to allergies and ear infections and skin infections because of allergy. Or was this a, you know, psychiatric response? Dogs do sometimes mourn other, you know, pets' passings or their owners who pass away. And she's having some sort of, you know, PTSD sort of thing. Has the dog been seen by a vet for the ears and the skin?
Yeah, that was where they actually got the cones from.
Okay.
And it wasn't really all that effective, so they went back, and that was when they got the cones and the paws. And then, unfortunately, the vet didn't, or this particular vet, wasn't sure really where to go from here, and they just said to really keep a watchful eye out. And, I mean, you can only do so much when either you have things going on during the day or you have work or whatever.
Right.
And you come home and her ear's just bleeding. And you're like, what are you doing to yourself?
Yes. Like, you know, sometimes, you know, using collars and cones and things like that to keep them from scratching themselves are fine. But if you don't get rid of the itch or whatever is driving them crazy, be it psychiatric issues or a physical issue, to me, I hate that. It's like tying your hands up and saying, I'm sorry, you can't scratch yourself if you have a really bad itch. So I would like to see this dog treated, you know, for infection, but then also maybe think about trying some anti-anxiety medication on the dog as well and seeing if the combination, get the infection under control and give the dog something to sort of calm it down for a while and see if that doesn't help.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Daniel. We appreciate the call. I mean, so it could be allergies in that case.
Oh, it absolutely could be.
So wouldn't that be a prudent course of action to see about allergies before you went on to the antidepressants?
Well, you got to do both. I mean, you got to treat what you can treat, you know, treat the allergies and treat, you know, their mind and see what happens. Once things settle down, then maybe you can try weaning them off the medication. And
Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is our guest. Kathy in Red Hook is next. Kathy, you're on.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure,
I have a rescue. She's about 5 years old. We rescued her when she was 1.5. And for the past year, she has become like an attack dog. If a neighbor comes to the door, not even ringing the doorbell, just comes to the door and knocks. I don't know how to control her behavior. It's pretty severe. Do you have any helpful hints?
So, this is a relatively common issue for some dogs, not all, thankfully.
With rescues or dogs in general?
Well, just dogs in general. They reach a certain age and they sort of reach social maturity and now they think that they're in charge. So there's no simple fix to this. I'm going to tell you right off the bat, this is not a simple fix, but you need to... Has she been to any kind of obedience class?
When we first adopted her, we did have her to obedience class, but that's 4 years ago, almost 4 years.
All right. You know, it's never too old to go back to class. I would definitely, you know, you need to work with her to teach her that, you know, certain commands that you can give her when she's in this situation. So, you know, teaching her to go to a bed or go lay down and things like that. So that when someone comes to the door, you can immediately say, you know, go to your bed and, you know, teach her and give her a command that she knows to follow and what to do. So that she doesn't feel like she's got to be the, you know, the guardian of the door.
Okay.
And then she needs to learn to be down and calm as people come in the door.
Yes,
it's not going to be an overnight fix, but I would start with maybe thinking about taking her back to obedience class to sort of refresh her on,
okay,
on certain behaviors, and then slowly, and you can work with, you know, have someone, you know, just, you know, come up to the door, you know, while you know they're coming, so you can get her calm and get her sitting,
yeah,
and get used to people coming in the door with her being calm, and then work up to the door being knocked on, the bell being,
okay,
rung, things like that.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. I thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks, Kathy.
Okay. Take care.
Now, never having had a dog, when you go to obedience class, you,
yes,
go with your dog?
Oh, yes.
Always.
The obedience class is really for you.
Ah. Well, I could use that.
It's to teach you how to teach your dog.
I see.
And also, I find it's great because it also teaches your dog to listen to you in a distracted environment.
Interesting.
You know, it's one thing when you're at home by yourself. A lot of dogs are great. And then you get them in a room with a bunch of other people and other dogs, and now they have to listen to you in that crazy, distracted environment.
God, to be an obedience trainer, my heavens, the alcohol bills must be staggering. I mean, God, the stress of that job. Let's go to Sherry in Cohoes. Sherry, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My husband and I recently adopted a Chihuahua. And I was wondering, you know, as it's getting colder, what temperature we should start thinking about getting him, like a sweater or a jacket or stuff like that.
Well, I guess it kind of depends on the dog, and it depends on, you know, their hair coat. You know, Chihuahuas are pretty small, and they don't tend to have, mm-hmm, a whole lot of hair. So it doesn't hurt for them to wear a coat, you know, if they're going out in temperatures much below, you know, indoor house temperature.
Yeah.
You know, if it's 40,
okay,
you know. If they're going to be outside, if they're just going out to go to the bathroom, I wouldn't worry about it. But if you're taking them out for a walk or they're going to be outside for any period of time, you know, if you would put on a jacket, I would put on a jacket for them.
There you go.
Okay, cool. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
okay,
Sherry. Now, I've heard that humans lose most of our heat from the top of our head. Do they have doggy hats?
No.
Why?
I don't. No. I mean, dogs they heat themselves differently. Like, they don't sweat all over. They,
right,
pretty much sweat on their feet. You know, they lose a lot.
I thought they sweat on their nose. They sweat on their feet?
On their feet.
I'll be darned.
Yeah. And then they do a lot of their heat transfer by panting.
Yep.
So we don't pant.
Speak for yourself. All right. Let's go over to Patty in Clifton Park. Patty.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
You're
thank
on.
You for taking my call.
Okay.
What can we do for you, Patty?
Are you there?
Yes, we are here. Hello.
Oh, I had a question about whether or not to vaccinate my dog or whether I should do the blood test to check for if I need to. And can you explain to me why I would do either?
Okay. So it's called titers. They don't do titers for every vaccination. They do them for some of the big ones like canine distemper and canine parvo. They do rabies, although I will tell you, New York State does not recognize a rabies titer. So to be legal, your dog does need a rabies booster.
Okay.
But for distemper and parvo, we do have some people that prefer to do titers. The question is, what exactly is the proper titer level to be protective?
Okay.
And there aren't a lot of great studies to tell us how high of a titer is actually going to protect your dog. That said, you know, if we do a titer and it comes back pretty high, your dog is probably fine. It's usually more expensive to do titers than it is to do the vaccination. So you're not saving any money. It's not a money saving thing. Some people who in our practice who like to do it are for animals that have had a bad reaction in the past and they don't want to vaccinate them again. For most dogs, we only, you know, do distemper combinations every 3 years. So it's only a couple of times in their life that they're getting vaccinated. So for most dogs, it's much easier just to do the booster.
Okay. Well, I wasn't sure whether I wanted to do the vaccine or to do the blood test. So,
right.
Thank you for explaining it.
No problem.
Thanks, Patty. We appreciate the call. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is our guest on this Pets and Vets edition of Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Carrie, before we get back to the phones, this one came in from Facebook. Janet on Facebook, relating to the porcupine issue we discussed earlier. And Janet writes, to keep hunter dogs from getting tangled with undesirable pests, we bought a 1-inch cowbell to wear when they're running outside. Gives the pests a chance to get away unseen, unsmelled, and the cats as well.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Not a bad idea.
No.
All right, back to the phones we go at 800-348-2551. Evan in Northampton. Evan, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Before I forget, if you guys didn't hear Joe Donahue's book show today, you'd find it very interesting. It's about the world of dogs and their smells, so I highly recommend it. What I was going to comment on was, if you're out in the field and your dog gets into porcupines,
yeah,
it's easier to get the quills out if you snip the ends off first because they're hollow and they're puffed up. And when you snip the ends off, the air comes out and they deflate some and they're a little bit smaller, I guess. And the little furry barbs on them don't resist pulling quite so badly.
What do you think, Doc?
Well, I've tried that in the office, and I have to say, subjectively, I haven't really noticed a difference.
Doesn't help for you guys?
Not really. And truly, there aren't really barbs on the end. If you put a quill under the microscope, they're pretty darn smooth all the way down. So it's just, it really depends on, in my mind, where they are in the animal. There are some tissues, especially up around the muzzle, that really are, they really hang onto the quills. It's just a very, the tissue is tighter. Like the nose itself, the shiny part of the dog's nose is really hard to get quills out of because it's tough. It's a tough piece of tissue. So a lot of it depends on where they are.
All right, thank you.
Hey, Evan, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. You know, I don't see too many porcupines. Are there that many of them out there?
Well, there are a fair number. I unfortunately passed 3 dead ones on the road on the way up just today.
In dear old Delmar?
Yeah, between, you know, Greene County and Delmar.
How about that?
So it's, they're pretty shy. I can only remember seeing one out in the wild myself in all the hikes I've done. They don't like to be seen.
They don't hang around residential neighborhoods?
They will.
But it's amazing. I've never seen one in my life in the wild. We see possums and everything else, but not a porcupine.
Oh, they're around.
Will a cat ever get tangled up with a porcupine?
Very rare.
They're smart, aren't they?
I've never had to pull quills out of a cat.
You see, cats are smart, and dogs, not so much. William in Southern Massachusetts. William, you're on.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, I got a question about the hair on my dog's tail. She's a 3-year-old pit bull, and her tail's not docked, and the hair is starting to get patchy and falling out. She's got a bald spot about 3 inches up on her tail, and she's pretty notorious for sitting on her tail. You know, when she sits down, her tail comes underneath her butt, you know, pokes out straight.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if that would be the reason or if she might be developing a skin issue because, like I said, the hair is starting to get patchy toward the tip of the tail also, and she also bites at it like she's itching for fleas, but you know she doesn't have any fleas, so
so certainly itchiness around the tail, a couple of things come to mind. One is fleas, because fleas do like the back end of the dog, and In an allergic dog, you don't always see the fleas because it just takes one bite to make them go nuts. So just make sure you're doing really good flea control. And then secondly, it could be her anal glands potentially bothering her, making her want to bite at her tail area. Anal glands are these little scent glands inside their anus that normally empty when they poop, and sometimes they don't, and it sort of gives them an itchy, irritated feeling.
The area that's going bald is towards the base of her tail, pretty much right where she sits on it.
Okay.
And when she bites at her tail, it's nowhere near there.
Interesting.
She can't reach that far up. When she's biting at her tail, like itching it, it's more towards the tip.
The tip.
Okay.
But the actual bald spot itself is up closer to the face.
All right.
Yeah, and then lastly again, we fall into the allergy category, and she's a young pit bull. This is right about the time if they're going to develop allergies, and fall is prime time for allergies.
Yep.
So you might want to have a discussion with your vet about that.
All right, testing for allergies.
Yeah.
Do are they notorious or like dry skin? Would that do it too?
Not so much. If it was, you know, if she were a male dog and a bald spot near the end of her, you know, to the base of her tail, they have a little gland there that can act up with testosterone. But being a girl, it's unlikely.
Okay.
I'll speak to my vet about doing an allergy test.
Yep.
Thanks a lot. Now, so this is the time of year where there are more allergies.
Well, not more. It's just for dogs when that, you know, people think when the everything's dying outside, it is the tail end. But it seems like when the trees are shedding their leaves, it's sort of all that, you know, leaf litter and all that really stirs things up.
So pets pretty much have the same allergies humans do?
You bet. Okay. They just act differently. They don't get sneezing and runny eyes and hay fever signs. They get itchy.
Okay. And so there's really no way to know easily if it is an environmental or a food allergy. They present the same symptoms?
Yes.
Yeah.
Although sometimes food allergies, they will also have some intestinal signs. Hmm. But and it tends to be nonstop year-round as long as they're eating the same thing.
But it'll come on at a certain point.
It can come on anytime.
All right, let's go back to the phones and Jim in Valencia. Jim, you're on with Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin.
Good afternoon. Thanks very much.
Sure.
I have a 8-year-old chocolate lab, and we've been battling an issue with his nose for about a year and a half. It's raw, red, bleeds, crusty. Imagine the worst case of chapped lips, and that's my dog's nose. We've tried some oral steroids, different creams and things, but he licks them off as soon as you put them on. Wondered if you had any thoughts.
Yeah, it sounds like it could possibly be a form of something called pemphigus. Does that ring a bell? Did your vet mention anything about that?
That does not.
Okay. Did you just try the steroids on your own, or has he been seen by a vet?
No, he's been seen a couple times by a vet. My vet has been kind of stumped. So.
Okay.
I heard your show and thought I'd give you a call.
Give it a shot.
They do have some newer topicals that you can use for pemphigus. And sometimes, honestly, if you're stumped, getting a little snip of the tissue for a biopsy just to make sure you're not dealing with something else is not a bad idea.
What's pemphigus?
It's an autoimmune disease. So basically the dog's body is attacking his own nose.
Treatable?
It is. It's controllable.
Controllable.
It's not necessarily curable.
Okay.
But it's controllable.
Could you just say it or maybe even spell it once time again, please?
Sure. It's PEMPHIGUS.
Pemphigus.
All right. Pemphigus. Thanks very much. I'll ask my vet about it.
Jim, thank you very much. It is Pets and Vets today on Vox Pop. We're joined by Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin, and we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Waterwheel Village, Galway, New York, a country store since 1923, offering aged cheddar cheeses, nostalgic candies, New York products, and gifts. WaterwheelVillage.com. Zankel Music Center at Skidmore College, presenting the Ethiopian soul music of Debo Band on Saturday, November 5th, skidmore.edu/ZANKEL. Interactive Media Consulting, Saratoga Springs, New York, providing logo and print design, web development, and digital marketing throughout the capital region and beyond, marketing creative and business ideas since 1996, imediaconsult.com. Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking, rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, ashfieldstone.com. And Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency, using food scraps and yard waste to create nutrient-rich compost to help conserve water and control weeds. Compost available for purchase, ucrra.org.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Pets and Vets, 800-348-2551, the telephone number. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is our guest. And Ian in Latham. Ian, you're next.
Hi, I have an 80-pound chocolate labradoodle, and he's had itching allergies or some itching for the last couple of years, and we've been giving him for the last 6 months a medication called Apoquil.
Yep.
And it's actually been a miracle drug. It's worked beautifully with him. And unfortunately, my wife and I have not been able to find any research, any long-term side effects or short-term And even our vet hasn't really been able to provide us with any. And I just fear with giving him a pill a day without knowing if there are any long-term side effects, if we could be doing any damage. So I wondered if you had any information on that.
Well, Apoquel is a relatively new medication, and it has been the miracle drug for some dogs with really nasty allergies, because for years we were pretty much stuck using, you know, steroids in a lot of these dogs with the severe allergies. And that definitely right. leads to side effects, and, you know, for sure. The Apoquel works totally differently. It works on a cell membrane receptor. And as far as I could tell from when they came and did the little talk to us at our practice about it, it seems like it's going to be a really safe drug. I have not had any of our patients have any side effects from it. It just works great. So it may take a few more years of it being out on the market to see if any oddball thing is going to come up. But for right now, it appears to be, you know, a really, really good product. The only downside to it at all has been the cost. But, you know, for some dogs
that are so... Given our dogs so much,
Yeah, some dogs that are so miserable. We had one client that was ready to put their dog to sleep.
Oh, boy.
It was so miserable. And now the dog is doing fantastic. So
there you go.
Yeah, it's incredible. Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot. Now, okay, now how long has this been on the market?
It came out a year or two ago. The problem is it came out, everybody wanted it, and the company couldn't keep up with the manufacturing. So then we couldn't get it. So then they came out with it again, only in very limited numbers. So we had to like keep track of how many dogs we
have
had
a waiting
on it
list
to make
sure.
Exactly. We had a waiting list, all this. Now they finally have caught up and they're being able to. So it's been on the market for a few years.
So tell me briefly, and we have a ton of calls and we have to get right back to them. But when there's a drug approved for human use, it takes a long time and it's a long process. What about a
same thing.
Dog
for dogs.
Really? So same it's a thing. So what sort of vetting? Same thing?
Same thing.
So,
and that's why it comes out, and that's why it's so expensive to start with. I'm assuming at some point the cost will start to come down, and then eventually they'll get generic. And
does the
help.
FDA approve
yep.
doggy and
FDA.
Kitty
yep.
drugs too? All right, let's go to Devin in Schenectady. Devin, you're on with Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a Cocker Spaniel that he keeps getting sprayed by skunks. I don't know if there's anything that can deteriorate from him from chasing him or anything.
Oh, boy.
So you're looking for advice not to take care of the skunk smell, but to get him to stop chasing the skunk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I don't...
Unfortunately, again, it's kind of like the porcupine thing. They don't learn.
okay.
And if they're prey-driven and they think that little black and white kitty is fun to chase, they're going to keep chasing them.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
You know, I would say a lot of times the skunks, they're a nighttime critter, you know.
Yeah.
So if you're letting the dog out early in the morning or before you go to bed, maybe take them out on a leash.
That's a good idea.
Instead of just letting them run
okay.
out in the yard. I have the same problem with my dog. We don't let him out after dark or before dawn.
Makes
not
sense.
Not on a leash.
Gotcha.
All right, Devin,
gotcha.
Thanks a lot for that.
All right, thank you.
Good luck. And Margaret in Windham. Margaret, you're on.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Good.
Hey, so, first of all, I've got one comment about this fellow with the beagle possibly suffering from psychological issues because his doggy friend died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How about getting him a kitten or a puppy and seeing if there's another companion might help
That's
with that
true.
Issue.
You bet.
Then the other thing is I have a friend who has recently passed away in the Dominican Republic who had four large dogs, and I'm considering bringing them to New York to keep them together so that they can stay together, and because I know the dogs and they know me, but I'm not sure the best way to bring them up. I've never been a fan of putting dogs in the hold of an airplane, and it is getting colder out now, so I don't know if it's better for me to try to get them a nonstop flight to JFK, which is going to be longer, or do a short trip to Florida or Tennessee and drive down and pick them up. And the other thing is, what tips would you have to give them a comfortable flight?
Oh. Yeah, that's, I guess, boy, that's a toughie. the on the one hand, the shorter flight with you driving down and driving them up, I guess it also depends on how they are in a car. If they're going to be freaking out all the way driving up from Florida, that could be tough. So then the slightly longer flight to JFK might not be a bad idea. They do say that they keep the hold of the plane. It's not supposed to, you know, get much below 45 degrees. So while it's cool, it's not ice cold.
Okay,
I mean, they're not gonna freeze these dogs to death.
And
as far as keeping them comfortable when they're on the plane, you could speak to their vet down there about maybe giving them a light tranquilizer for the flight.
Yeah.
Or an anti-anxiety, something, you know. There's a drug called alprazolam, which is basically Xanax, which just relieves anxiety. And that might be the best thing for them.
All right, great.
Well,
thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. 800-348-2551. Well, doctor, we lost the computer here.
Uh-oh.
So I'm going to go. I'm going to fly blind. I can see who's calling, and I just don't know how long they've been on hold. So we'll just wing it. Let's go to Bob in Rhinebeck. Bob, you're on.
Yes. I was just putting gas in my car.
Oh, nice.
I just lost a cat last month. I have a 2-year-old black kitty, and I have tons of people offering me cats, younger ones and older ones. Is there a preference when you bring in a new cat, younger cat? Because I've had problems with the two cats before getting used to each other.
So the cat you have now is two?
About two and a half, maybe.
Okay. Well, in my mind...
He's very friendly, too.
Yep. So a young, you know, 2.5-year-old male cat, I think generally he's probably going to be more accepting of another cat than a lot of other cats out there. He's still young enough that he's got a little of the kitten in him. And so I think it's up to you whether you want to try for another adult or whether you want to get a kitten. I think you have a better chance of him being accepting than an older cat who's already sort of set in their ways. So I guess it kind of depends on what you're wanting to do.
But you think he'd be better off with another adult type cat?
I think he would accept either or. Certainly, if you bring if the adult cat you're bringing in is an older adult cat, again, it might be more of a problem for them accepting him.
Yeah.
Where if you go a younger cat, you know, they're just two younger cats. They, you know, once you get them playing, a lot of times they forget that they don't like each other. So,
there you go.
I've had a lot of cats and a lot of fussiness, so I understand. Okay, thank you very much.
Well, you're
appreciate
welcome.
The call. Over to Livia in Broad Alban. Livia, you're on.
Yes, hello. I have a almost 7-year-old miniature poodle, and he has seizures. He's been having seizures since he was about 8 months old. So we've taken him to the vet, we've gotten the blood test, and there's no kidney issues, there's no liver issues. I guess it seems to just probably be genetic. Now, recently, I would say in the past like 2 months, they started going from just short tremors to short, more violent seizures. And the doctor prescribed phenobarbital, and I'm just a little concerned because the doctor mentioned there being side effects with the phenobarbital on the liver. And I have heard studies in people where cannabis oil has stopped the seizures. So I was just wondering if there was anything more natural, such as a cannabis oil, for a pet.
Okay.
My guess is there probably are. Unfortunately, I do not have a lot of personal knowledge with cannabis oil or other alternative medicines. You might want to try and get in touch with an alternative veterinarian, and there are a few in the area that like to, you know, do more alternative, natural,
Chris Dallas is one who's on this program right. every so often. And
right.
I don't know exactly where she is, but she's in the region.
There are also other anti-seizure medications that have fewer long-term side effects. The one reason your veterinarian might have picked phenobarbital is it works really quickly. So if we want to get something into the animal to get them to stop having, you know, seizures more frequently, we'll often start with phenobarbital and then transition them over to something more longer term that has fewer side effects and then get them off the phenobarbital.
Okay, because they're not, you know, they're not like, he'll have like two or three in a month and then he won't have any for like, I'd say 2 or 3 months, and then he'll have, you know, a couple more. So
right.
they're not clustered closely together. It's just that over the past two that he has had, they've been more grand mal than you know, tremors.
Right. And that's always a problem with seizures is, you know, you have to decide when to start medication. There's no clear cut, you know, unless they have like four in a day, then you're going to want to get them started on medicine. But it's generally, are they becoming more frequent? Are they more than once a month? Because a lot of times, even on medication, you're not going to stop every seizure.
Yeah.
You know, you're trying to get them down to less than one a month.
Okay, because when I started the first, like when I first, because I monitor, like I keep track of how many he'll have
yep.
that I'm aware of, that I'm there for. But I can't monitor everyone like when I'm not there. Yep.
Exactly.
So, I mean, he's had like 1 year 19, the next year 14, then 17. So there's not really, I mean, do you know if poodles are prone to seizures?
Yeah, any of the smaller dogs, are a little, and some large breed dogs like Labradors, they're it's not unheard of in poodles for sure.
All right, Livia, thanks a lot for the call, and let's go over to Chris in Albany. Chris, you're on.
Well, thank you very much. I have an important question that I want to ask you in regards to my three Chihuahuas. And recently, they had their booster shots. But before I get to the question, I just wanted to add something that might save someone's life or their lives or their pets. When I had an older cat who was 22 years old many years ago, and my daughter wanted a kitten, and I brought the kitten into the house, and he hated her, and he really fussed, and it was not a happy situation. And I just happened to read something in the newspaper at the time. Cole asked the vet, and the vet suggested putting a common scent on the two cats. And so I went in and grabbed the bottle of perfume off my wife's counter, and I put a scent of perfume behind each of their ears. And the next morning, that old guy was loving her and licking her and cleaning her. And he lived to be 27 and a half.
Wow.
She lived to be 21 years of age. And I've always shared that story in hope, rather than someone get rid of a pet, give them a common scent. I think a couple hours ago, you just had a show on animals and their sense
yeah.
of smell.
Yep.
And it really worked. And God bless my cat, Pumpkin Cuddles. I mean, it was a love story right to the end. Even on his last day of life, when he had many strokes, we brought Cuddles at the time over to him. He was 27 and a half at that point. He still was cleaning her. So it was a really nice story, and it may help someone's life. But my question for you is this. I have three Chihuahuas, and recently we had them to the doctor for their checkup, and I shared all this information with their vet. They had leptospirosis booster and Lyme boosters, and my poor guys got so sick from that. I mean, they had lumps on their shoulders, and they range in weight from 7 to maybe 11 and a half pounds. And it really incapacitated them, I'd say, for 2 weeks. Do you have any suggestions as to how to deal with giving them the booster? Or it got us to thinking that perhaps the booster was worse than the effect, but I know it's not.
Yeah.
But it was tough watching them go through this.
Yeah.
Any
so,
suggestions?
Yeah, so both of those vaccinations are bacterial. And bacterial mm-hmm. vaccines do have a tendency to cause more reactions in dogs. So one mm-hmm. thing would be to not get them both done on the same day. And okay. You can also give the dogs, we'll often give the dogs an injection of Benadryl at the same time as they get the vaccine. And that will often counteract the vaccination or the reaction.
The effects,
Okay. So I would, I wouldn't do them, especially on the little guys like that that have shown a reaction. I would, I would split it up the next time around. And it doesn't need to be a lot. You could even a few days or a week apart.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, because it. Thank you very much, Doctor.
You're welcome.
Chris, thanks a lot. So, I mean, is it common? Is it okay to put perfume on an animal?
Well, I mean, I guess a little tiny bit. I mean, the thing I would think is it's I'm very sensitive to perfume.
Yeah.
And I don't have a cat's nose. I mean, they probably couldn't smell anything at that point. So I, besides the perfume.
I've never heard that particular story before.
Yeah. I could see, a similar scent so that they think they're like each other, but you'd have to be very, very careful.
I mean, but that's what feel away does, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, feel away is also, it's the feel good pheromone. So when cats rub up against you and rub on you, they're rubbing their scent on you, and it's supposed to be that scent.
Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin, that was fun. More fun than volunteering in the fun drive?
Yeah. It was fun.
Well, we'll have you back.
Went just as quick as the fun drive did.
It's amazing, isn't it? And support comes from Mango Tree Imports, a global fair trade shop in downtown Saratoga Springs, New York, featuring artisan goods from more than 60 countries. MangoTreeImports.com and Facebook. Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Edith Hunsberger, a painter in acrylic and watercolors, specializing in portrait paintings of people and pets from photographs. Edith-Hunsberger.artistwebsites.com. Penny Farthing Investment Management Amherst, a socially conscious, fee-only investment advisor of personal retirement and endowment portfolios, including the Bright Penny Community Strategies, brightpenny.org. And Spate Consulting and Coaching, Shelburne Falls, more than 20 years of working with leaders and teams committed to purposeful change. See it whole at Move It Forward. DLSPECHT.com. Thanks again to Dr. O'Loughlin for joining us today. Thanks for listening and for all the great calls. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. The phones were expertly answered by Colleen O'Connell today. And our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, the last gardening show of 2016. Stand by now for news.